The E is all about execution. That's not cut the head off on the chopping block.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I think of accounting, I think of, you know, numbers, I think of, you know, things being quite dry, I'm thinking about guys in pinstripe suits, and really, you know, it doesn't really excite me that much. But today I want to introduce you to an accountant who breaks the mold. He is certainly not your typical accountant, and though he's very good at crunching numbers and doing all the accounting sort of stuff, he is absolutely dynamic. He is a forward thinker. He loves to understand business and dissect them and help them perform at a much higher level. Jason Cunningham is an author of a fantastic book called Have Your Cake and Sell It Too. I love the title because what it refers to is about building a business, you know, from the point of view of selling it, you know, beginning with the end in mind now and understanding what a fantastic saleable business would look like right now. Now, you might not ever want to sell your practice, and that's completely cool, but we want to make sure that your business is optimized for success in every possible way. And Jason unpacks all of that in his book. And in today's conversation, we're going to be diving into his 7-step framework for that. It's a lot of fun, and you'll understand that Jason's a real live wire. He's got a vast amount of experience across a variety of different industries, and he's a very, very knowledgeable guy. We're going to be talking a lot about cash flow. We're going to be talking a lot about, you know, his history and, you know, drawing wages or not drawing wages. We're going to be talking about building teams. We're going to be talking about how to sack yourself and make yourself redundant from the business. We're going to be talking about all these sorts of things to make practicing in your business that much easier, that much more profitable, and ultimately that much more fulfilling. So I hope you've got a pen and paper handy, because I guarantee you throughout this session, Jason is going to be dropping loads and loads of value bombs. He speaks quickly, so you're going to have to listen quickly. I can tell you he speaks at a mile a minute and is full of good stuff. So I hope you really enjoy today's interview. And without any further ado, here's the man himself, Jason Cunningham. Jason Cunningham, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for making the time to come and have a chat to us.
Thanks a lot for having me, Jesse.
It's absolutely a pleasure, mate. Now, listen, mate, I've been looking at your stuff online, and I have to say, you know, firstly, congratulations on, you know, a really wonderfully constructed, you know, online presence and whatnot. And it struck me as I was going through all the things you talk about in your blog, your videos, some really good content there, by the way, but you don't strike me as the average accountant.
No, that's true. It's funny you should say that. When I was at when I was at high school and trying to pick my subjects to work out what it is I wanted to do when I left high school. And, you know, at high school, we're only kids, and it's a real big challenge for us to choose, you know, at 16 or 17 years old, what is it that I want to do for the rest of my life? I guess I didn't really know. I knew that I was a good drawer, and I was good at maths, and I was good at accounting. So I thought, I'll either be an architect or an accountant. So in year 12, I had to do a maths and a science. So I did maths A and physics. And then I did accounting and economics and English. And I thought, we'll see how we go. And as it turned out, I didn't get the marks to be an architect, so I became an accountant. So I'm like this accidental accountant, if you like, you know?
Well, it looks like it's worked out pretty well for you, mate. So
it has, yeah.
I'm curious to understand, because, you know, as I said, you don't strike me as the typical accountant. Has that been, you know, something deliberate? Is it something that just is you being, you know, just a your authentic self, which I assume it is, but what is it about accounting stereotypes that you kind of go, yeah, that just doesn't fit for me? I'm curious about your journey.
Yeah, there's two parts to it. So when I was at uni, I always thought to myself, I never want to be an accountant on the street corner knocking together tax returns. And I thought, I want to go and work in an industry. And so once I'd finished my degree, I got a graduate position at Ford Motor Company, which is, you know, building cars. And when I was at Ford, I worked there for about 4.5 years before I started my practice. And rather than just focusing on the area that I was working in, so I worked in manufacturing, finance, accounts receivable, product development, and then profit analysis, I wanted to understand the whole business. And so I'd walk through the factory, I'd speak to the marketing and sales guys, I'd speak to the purchasing and procurement team, and I really want to understand from cradle to grave how it goes about building and selling a car. And so And for me, it was always about the end customer. What is the end customer about? And the other key learning that I had was that, you know, I had parents that had businesses, and all through my life, all I knew about was business. And, you know, I guess I learned a lot at university. I learned a lot doing my CPA. You know, I'm a qualified car parking attendant, certified practicing accountant. I only pay me to there. But when I was growing up, I learned most of what I am today through my parents, both directly and indirectly. You see, at the end of grade five, my father, we used to walk to school. My brother and sister and I used to walk to school. And when we got home, my old man was at home at the kitchen table with mum. And I said, "Oh, Dad, what are you doing home at, you know, 3:30, quarter to four?" And he sat us down and told us that he'd just lost his business. And the bank has forced mum and dad to sell their house and sell their cars. And we were moving to my nan's house in a poorer suburb than where we lived. And I thought to myself, "Oh my God, this is devastating. You know, woe is me. This is not fair." And my mum and dad had to sell up everything, and we moved into the bedroom that my father grew up in. We moved in, the start of grade six, I don't know what it was, 12 or 13, right at the start of your pubescent, you know, adolescent sort of lifestyle. And here I am sharing a bedroom with mum, dad, and my sister and my brother. And I thought, woe is me, this is disastrous. And we would come home from school. Mum and dad, I think back then, this is 30-odd years ago, mum and dad owed in excess of $100,000. 30 years ago is a lot of money, and they didn't have any assets to their name. And we as a family would come home after school, and we would assemble as like a little sweatshop where we would assemble taps, you know, like a hot tap and a cold tap, and we put the spindle in, the washer on, put the hot and cold tap on, and we would assemble them as a family on a little production line where we'd get paid 28 cents for a set of taps. And we used to do that all the way up to dinner. Mum would run off and make dinner. We'd wash up, have dinner. And then after dinner, we would assemble fake jewelry where we'd get 35 cents for a pair of earrings. And the nights when I wasn't playing footy, me and mum and dad would go and clean various different daycare centres and libraries. And I used to think, woe is me, this is not fair. All my mates are, you know, playing on their Donkey Kong or whatever, you know. And here I was working as a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kid. And it wasn't until mum and dad paid off all their debt and we moved out of Nan's house and we were renting a house. And I remember Dad saying to us, we were going to a Christmas party, his work Christmas party. And he said, "Don't tell my boss, but I'm about to go back into business and start another business." And I said to Dad, "Dad, you know, I'm 16. Anyone's got teenage kids know that they know everything, right?" And you've got teenage daughters, you know, I'll tell you, Dad, they know everything, right?
Yeah.
My kids are the same, you know. I said, "Dad, don't do it. This is mad. We've just got out of this nightmare," because I was thinking, I equated business to losing everything, right? Now, fortunately for me and fortunately for them, my old man did not heed his 15, 16-year-old son's advice, and he went back into business. And now, you know, 25, 30 years later, we're his accountant and his advisors. And it's safe to say that they're one of our more successful, one of our more profitable clients that we've got. And I can tell you what, as their accountant, I charge them accordingly. How dare they make you do taps and clean daycare centres as a 13, 14-year-old kid?
Well, hopefully they don't call you around to do the plumbing as well.
But the big thing is, Jess, I learn a lot from them. I learn a lot about persistence, resilience. But, you know, I always pick my old man's brain about, you know, what it is that makes a successful business. And he always reinforced the importance of seeing things through the eyes of the customer, not the way you want to do things, but give the customer what it is that he or she is after.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really good lessons in there. And, yeah, one of my mentors often says, you know, you learn the most through adversity rather than, you know, the successes that you have. And I'm curious, as you went through that process as a teenager, and obviously as a teenager, you come at it from a different perspective than you do now looking back on it. But, you know, the resilience that your family went, you know, discovered, the things that you've had to put in place since then, how has that kind of shown up in your own business? I'm curious to know how those lessons stayed with you and went into your own practice.
Yeah, good question. So when my business partner and I, we went to primary school, high school and university together. And I worked at Ford. He worked for an accounting firm in town. And, you know, we started our practice at the age of 24. So we were 24-year-old advisors, business and financial advisors. We had no experience. We had no clients. We were making no money. And to be honest with you, we had no idea. But like you, we had mentors and all that sort of stuff. And our first mentor implored on us the importance of being on purpose. And he kept saying to us, "Jason, you've got to be on purpose, not only in your personal life, but in your business life. You need to develop a mission statement that talks to what it is that you give others." And see, we went away on our first business planning trip, you know, 19 years ago. We flew to Port Douglas and we wrote our first business plan. It was our first tax deductible business trip. Not that we needed the tax deduction because we weren't making any money, but we were excited that we're on suits and we're on a plane and we flew up north and we wrote that first business plan. But what underpinned it was our purpose, which is to help our clients achieve their business and personal goals through proactive service and ongoing advice. And we're always true to that purpose. And we know that if we focus and we stay on purpose, then what you give, then what you want, if you focus on what you give, then what you want will come to you. And in those early years, we weren't making any money, Jess. I mean, in that first year of business, we turned over the enormous sum of $60,000. I think we had about 10 clients, but one of them was another accounting firm that we did spillover work for. And so really, we only had about 9 clients. And we were drawing the enormous sum of $100 each a month. Wow. And so the resilience piece was all about, well, you just got to keep doing what you got to do. And eventually, if you keep focusing and doing the right thing, what you want will come to you. And I remember the next year we went up, we had another trip away and we increased our wage from $100 a month to $100 a week. And then we went to $500 a week and then $1,000 a week. Because I started to understand that for most business owners, they're the last people to get paid, right?
Always.
And if you hire a new dentist or if you hire a new customer service person or if you buy a new chair or buy new equipment or whatever it is that you do in your business, you find the money to pay for it, right? But you sacrifice yourself. So we made sure that there was a clear, distinct delineation between us as the owner and our business. And every year we give ourselves a pay rise.
Fantastic.
Sort of, you know, fast forward to today, this year we'll probably turn over about $11 million in our business. So it's a bit higher than 60 grand. And well, let's hopefully we're earning a bit more than $100 a month, you know?
I hope so too, mate. I'm sure you are. I'm sure you're doing all right, mate. And look, I'm also really curious, mate, because you've published a couple of books and the second book that you wrote was called Have Your Cake and Sell It Too, which phenomenally great title. I love it.
Oh, thank you.
And congratulations on getting it done. I'm curious to understand the origins of the title. It's not the typical title for business. I'm wondering, can you just walk me through what it's about? What drove you to write that book?
Yeah, okay, I will. If I could just rewind a second. So the first book that I wrote, after I wrote my first book, I thought I will never, ever, ever do this again.
I'm at that point right now.
Yeah. It's like when you have kids, right? I speak to my wife and I had twins straight off the bat, and we thought we are never even going to sleep in the same room, let alone think about having kids again, right? It takes you a good 2 years to get over twins, right?
Sure does.
And so the book took me about 9 months, almost, you know, about the same gestation period of having kids. And it's nowhere near as difficult as giving birth, obviously, but it broke me. But the first book was really about personal wealth and personal finance. And it was called Where's My Money? 6 or 7 years later, I started to feel that there was a bit of a gap because our business is about business advisory as well as personal wealth advisory. And I knew that we had the piece for personal wealth advisory, but I felt like that there was something missing. And I knew that I wanted to give something back and I wanted to write something about how to run a successful business. And a mentor of mine, he doesn't even know that he's a mentor of mine, but he's a guy that every Friday we go to the gym together. There's about 5 or 6 guys that go to the gym together. And we get there a bit late and we all go into work on a Friday late, except this guy. And I call him Macca in my book. That's not his real name, but for the sake of this argument. And this guy, Macca, he works 4 hours a week. On Monday.
Wow.
From 10 till 2. Now, you reckon your Monday's pretty tough because you go, oh, my God. This guy's got his whole week on the one day. But, you know, he gets to work on Monday at 10 o'clock. By midday, it's hump day for him, right? And then at 1 o'clock, it's Thursday afternoon drinks. And 2 o'clock Friday, he's gone home. Now, we would get to the gym late. We'd have a workout. We'd go across the road. We have breakfast and we solve the problems of the world. And then I'd get to about 10 o'clock and I'd say, oh, look, Macca, I've got to go off to work. And he'd go, Jace, aren't you the boss? Don't you own that business? I go, yeah. But you don't understand. I've got stuff to do. I'm really important and blah, 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 blah. He goes, no, mate, you don't understand. If you have to go into your work now at 10 o'clock, your business is broke. It's not working. I thought, that is a really good point. And so the whole premise of my book, Have Your Cake and Sell It Too, is really about that, the ethos that Stephen Covey talks about in his 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of his habits is begin with the end in mind. So I argue that every business owner should build a business that's ready for sale. Even if you don't want to sell it, imagine what a business looks like if it's ready for sale right now today. Now, before we get there, when I talk to business owners, and I do that every day, whether it's on tally or public speaking or when they come into our business, when I talk to a business owner, I say, why did you go into business? And they say to me, Jay, because I wanted to make more money. I wanted to be the boss. I wanted to have a better lifestyle. I wanted to come and go as I please. I want to spend more time with friends and family. And then my next question is, you know, how's that working out for you? And I go, yeah, disaster. So all that in mind, it just suddenly dawned on me that if you had a business that was ready for sale right now, what does it look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? Well, it's got amazing profitability, fantastic cash flow, a team that are a delight to work with, the best type of customers. You can come and go as you please. And you know what? Someone would write you a dirty big check to take it off your hands if you wanted to give it to them. And I thought, that's the business that everyone should strive towards. And so that's what my book is all about. It's how to have your cake and sell it to the 7 key ingredients to business success. Like all good accountants, success, we love an acronym. You know, CPA, car parking attendant. Success is an acronym that talks about the 7 steps to building a successful business.
Cool. Well, do you want to run through the 7 steps?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first S talks about the strategy. And it's all about building and having a sales mentality. So building the developing a strategy so that your business is ready for sale. The U stands for understand yourself. And that really talks about you and your business. It talks about your mission statement, your core values, your why, and the guiding principles around how it is that you run your business. The first C talks about, one would argue, the most important or almost first or second most important people in our world, which are our customers or we call them clients. The next C is all about ka-ching, you know, that cashola, the money piece. And being an accountant, we've got to talk about that. The E is all about execution. That's not cut the head off the chopping block, but it's about the execution of the strategy. And that really is about your processes, and fundamentally the most important people in our business, which are our people. The next S is a scary one. It's all about learning to sack yourself. No. And for a lot of us, whether we're dentists, whether we're accountants, you see, we're typically technicians and we go into the field because, hey, we're really good at dentistry or I'm awesome at accounting. And that notion of sacking yourself is really scary for some people because they go, Struth, what am I going to do now? And then the final S is the sale piece, how to maximize the sale price, depending on who the purchase is going to be.
Mate, I love that. That's fantastic. And I'm an ex-military guy, mate, so I love acronyms at the best of times. And so you had me at the word acronym. But I want to just explore the sack yourself concept because I really agree with you. Most dentists who go into practice of their own are technicians. And you know, for them and for a lot of people, I don't think it's just dentists, I think it's small business owners in general, is there's a whole lot of identity tied up in that. There's a whole lot of, you know, if I sack myself, then what am I going to do? And I sometimes wonder whether there's a little bit of reticence to do that because of a fear on what's on the other side of the door. And I'm curious to explore, you know, firstly, how did you detach your identity from being a CPA to then going, I'm a business owner. I'm not just an accountant. I'm a business owner. I'm transitioning to true business ownership as opposed to the owner-operator model. And secondly, what were some practical things you needed to do to be able to walk through that door with confidence?
Thank you for that. That's a good lead-in. I was the same. I was nervous. I built my own identity within our organization, and I used to think, and maybe I was right, I was the smartest guy at work, right? And I was the go-to guy. So when all the problems came, if you get to a certain point, then don't worry, Jay will fix it. But the overarching or the overriding objective for me was all about creating leverage. I mean, irrespective of how good you are at your craft and how good you charge your hourly rate out or whatever it is, unless you're at 5-10 grand an hour, it's really hard to get leverage from your own time because we've all only got 24 hours in a day. We should be sleeping for about 8. That leaves 16. You've got to eat and have a shower. You should do some exercise, talk to your wife and your kids, you know. So it's really reducing the amount of time that we've got. And so for me, the overriding principle was to create leverage. And so I thought to myself, okay, rather than be the best technician in my organization, why don't I try to become the best leader I can possibly be? And one of the greatest ways to become an amazing leader is to create other leaders. And so a major focus of my role within our business. So I own the business, but I'm also an employee of the business. It's really around coaching and mentoring and creating other leaders within our organization. And so some of the practical things that I used to be a GST expert, and that was a long time ago. But some of the practical things that I've done is I could not do a bad statement now if you told me. Secondly, I don't even have the software on my computer. I've made a few forced decisions so that there is no software on my computer, so I can't even do it. And there's a few different things and strategies that I put in place that will force or not enable me to do the role of a technician. But the other thing is that I've hired people that are way smarter than me, because not everybody is prepared to take the risk and jump out to run their own practice, because it's a bit daunting for some people. Some people want to be a really high paid and an important person in an organization. And so what we've tried to do is create an organization. And that's why our core values, or what we refer to as the culture in our organization, is mission critical, because we see that as leaders in our organization, one of our primary roles is to create an environment that's not only conducive enough to attract key people into our organization, but also adhesive enough to hold on to them. And so if I can create an environment that fosters that sort of activity, where we've got awesome team members coming into our organization, then it's a real win-win environment.
So what I'm hearing you say, Jason, is, you know, your role as leader is a couple of things, obviously, but firstly, to create that culture, create that, using the core values to create the culture, that world-class culture, so that as you go and attract and find, you know, A players for your organization, they're immersed in that culture, it brings the best out of them. And your role really is to guide them on their own path so that they have success in the company. And as you say, to develop them as leaders so that they in turn can develop leaders, and so the cycle continues, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, look, I think that's really wise and really, really wonderful advice. In terms of advice, because, you know, you hang around the business space as much as I do, where do you see some of the poor advice coming? You know, if you think about some of the things that get said out in the marketplace, I'm sure there's things you probably go, oh, geez, I just wouldn't do it that way, or there's things I just disagree with about that. But what do you think are the things where, you know, it's commonly accepted dogma that you kind of go, oh, I just don't buy into that?
The first thing that I definitely wouldn't do is I would never ever stifle or stop anybody's growth aspirations. I think people taking a risk, I think it's a wonderful thing. And a lot of accountants are averse towards risk. Now, if you strip me all back, my DNA says that I'm an accountant. I've got debits and credits running through my bloodstream, you know, and at bare basic bones, I'm an accountant that focuses on the numbers. But too often, accountants out there get confused about the role that the numbers or the financials play in a person's business. And let me explain that. What I mean by that is a lot of accountants believe that they should be the custodian of the financial data. And I argue that that is incorrect. You don't need to pay me, Jesse. You don't need to pay me to add up numbers on a piece of paper, because you're an intelligent man. You can do that yourself. And with the advance of various different software and cloud-based computing and cloud-based record keeping, really, it should be you that is the custodian of your data. And too often, accountants place this importance on this compliance piece, where they build you a profit and loss and a balance sheet, and they say you should make decisions on your business based on that. Now, please don't get me wrong. Your financial statements are mission critical, and by law, you need to produce them, especially if you've got a company or a trust operating your business. There's accounting standards that you need to adhere to. But the financial data is an outcome, not the driver of your business. And there's so many other drivers in your dentistry practice or hospitality business or any business. It's the drivers that you need to understand, the drive that create the numbers, that that's putting the horse before the cart. You with me?
Yeah, completely.
What we do with the financial data is just check how we're going. And so our business is about being that proactive piece and sitting with our clients and helping them build a dashboard as to what are the drivers that create the outcome in their business, whether it's number of new clients, what the time they spend in marketing. You know, we look at a business across its four key pillars, and they are your people, your processes, your customers, then your financials, because it's your people, your processes, and your customers that drive those numbers. So it's around what KPIs, what metrics do you need to have in place, and what do you need to monitor within your business around your people, around your processes, and your customers that drive your financials. And this is what we call this whole vertical integration. Then if you look at your business from a horizontal perspective, it's all about, okay, product development, marketing, sales, fulfillment, and then support. So the fulfillment piece is that doing it. That's the dentistry, whether you're building crowns for people or putting fillings in or whacking some braces on a kid or whatever it is. But you can't just do that, Jess. You got to look at, okay, from a product development piece, what products am I producing to my customer? Now, if you talk to your customer in a dentistry language, your customer's going to hear, blah, 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 you're going to hurt me. But if you talk to your customer in a language that he or she understands, I'm going to fix your smile for you, then all of a sudden, you know, so we talk to our clients about, okay, how do you build products, various different products, whether those products are a bundle of services or an actual product, but how does that product look like in your customers' eyes. Then from a marketing piece, how do you create that awareness out there? Because I believe the market, I believe in this concept of abundance. There's so much in it for all of us. So how do we get out there amongst the noise? And then how do I segregate the sale from the marketing? And how do I close that sale? The fulfillment piece we spoke about, and then finally the support. How do you build areas around IT, legal, HR, accounting, record keeping, and tax advice? How do you get that sorted as well? And so that's why our business, we're a little bit different. We do compliance, and we do tax returns. We do help people with BAS statements, and we help them with record keeping. But that's just part of what it is that we do, because we believe if we can't get to behind the numbers, then all we're doing is just being highly paid bookkeepers, and I'm adding no value to anybody, because anyone or most people I know can add stuff up.
Yeah, look, mate, I think there's a whole lot of gold there you've just dropped. And one of the things, it's ironic that you're talking about the whole concept of drivers. I literally got off a conversation before we came online with one of my clients. We were talking about critical drivers. And the concept, of course, is that, you know, management make decisions which lead to activities, which lead to outcomes. And, you know, we often look at the outcomes, and if we're happy with them, that's great. And if we're not, well, then we tend to get a bit, you know, sad without actually kind of thinking about the activities so much, or the drivers, as you say, that kind of lead to those outcomes. And you know, I really love the fact that you're wanting to focus a lot on the activities that produce results and building a dashboard around that, because that's critical. And I think, you know, for anyone listening, if you can take that advice that Jason's just shared with you and think about what are the, you know, if I've had a good month, what have I done well in terms of activities? If I've had a poor month, what have I missed, or what have I not done well? And build yourself a dashboard and look at that and examine it and make some decisions around that. So Jason, key thing I wanted to just ask you about that, though, is, you know, obviously looking at those numbers, you know, on your dashboard is critical. Do you have a recommendation, you know, when it comes to examining those numbers? Is it a daily event for you? Is it something you look at weekly, monthly? Or is it something you're kind of looking, you know, several times a day? How do you kind of keep track of what you do?
Yeah, so the first rule we have, Jesse, is no data, no decision, right? So that's why for us, too many people make decisions off the bat. I don't even know how they're doing it, but they don't even have any data. So no data, no decision. There's some numbers that I look at daily. There's some numbers that we look at weekly, and there's some numbers that we look at monthly, depending on some information. It's wise to look at it every day. So one of the things I look at daily is our daily banking, because I know how much we should be banking daily to give me a level of comfort. There are some things that I look at weekly around weekly capacity versus productivity. That's important. I look at weekly new client activity. I look at things monthly. I look at things like number of marketing activities that we're doing, because a lot of businesses, they can only see 3 months in advance. This is one of the challenges I have with a lot of clients that are in the trade. They just see what's in their pipeline for 3 months. And for mine, you've really got to be looking at a 12-month pipeline, and breaking it down over quarters is fine. But if you're in an annuity type business, or that recurring business where your customers keep coming back to you, you've got to have enough work across the seasons and not just get too caught up in what's happening in the next 3 months. So just depending on that indicator will depend on whether you look at it daily, weekly, or monthly. And that also depends on the type of industry and the type of business that you're in.
Yeah, cool. One of the things I just wanted to explore around that is, you know, again, you know, we've spoken a lot about data and the need for data and decision making. When it comes to the people with whom you interact, your clients, where do you see the biggest mistakes? You know, a new client comes to you, and I'm sure you see some recurring themes. What are the common mistakes that people make?
Yeah, good one. Okay, so the first mistake, every new client that I meet, I talk to them about their business and their goals and their aspirations and all that sort of stuff, and I say, so are you making money? And say, I don't know, I need to ask my accountant. I go, that's interesting, right? So that's the first mistake I have, is that people don't know how much money they're making. The second mistake I see is that there's not a clear or distinct delineation between themselves and their business. I argue that you should build a business so that it can create a better lifestyle for you, rather than your lifestyle leveraging the businesses. So too often, too many people are sold and stuck to their business. The third is most people don't stop and sharpen the saw. They are just too busy doing it, doing it, doing it, doing it. We've done it 20 times, and so every year, at the start of every year, we go away as a leadership group. We build our strategic plan every single year. Some years we do it twice a year.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, it's just a thing that we did it back in the days when we had 10 clients. We built a strategic plan. We do it today when we've got 3,000 clients. We do it every year. We just got back. We went in February. We went away down to Torquay, which is, you know, just on the coast there in Melbourne. But sometimes we fly away. And now what we're finding we're doing is a lot of our clients are seeing the value and the benefit in that. And so we're running events. So in June, I'm taking 35 business owners to Fiji to help them, on the back of their 7 key ingredients to business success, help them build their one-page strategic plan across each of those levels. And we're finding that by going away, get out of your practice, not just stay at home one day, get away, get out of the office, no phone, no email, whatever. You can check your emails at the end of the day and you can check your messages at certain times, but get away with a clear head. Take, you know, your key people or your business partners or whatever the key decision makers, and have a fresh crack at it and have a look at what you've done, but where do you want to go? And the big challenge, Jesse, is a lot of people don't know where they want to go or they don't know how to do it. Let's not get caught up in the how to do it. Just build a picture of what you think it might look like. There's so much, you know, positive feedback in having a clear thought as to where you want to take your practice. Whether you get there or not, that's secondary. But I tell you what, you definitely won't get there if you don't have a clear thought of what it's going to look like. So I think they're probably the top three that I see.
Yeah, look, mate, I think that's, again, some really wonderful words of advice there, because, again, just coming to that last one, if you don't have any target at all, then the chances are you're going to hit it, which is going nowhere fast. I really love that. And I love the fact that, you know, taking some time away to actually think about your business again, because, you know, what I find with dentists a lot is they're busy day-to-day delivering without actually kind of, you know, taking the time to think about their business. And then ultimately that seems to be one of the biggest hindrances to them actually getting out of the business and having them, you know, transition to true business ownership as opposed to being that owner operator. So lots of really good advice there. We are going to have to let you get back to your practice, surely, because I know you've been very generous with your time so far. I wanted to round out the interview with a quick question for you, two quick questions. Imagine that you're in Fiji and you've gone for a different purpose, but you've had the opportunity to invite, yeah, the handful of business luminaries, people, or not even just business luminaries, people you look up to, people you admire, you've got them around for a dinner party or a barbecue or whatever. Who would be the people that you'd most like to break bread with and pick their brains?
Okay, so straight off the bat, I've got to take Michael Jordan. Okay, sorry about that.
No need to apologize. And I'd like to know, what is it about Michael Jordan that you admire?
He was the best. He was the NBA. He took the NBA from where it was to where it is today. He is a brand. You know, people are wearing his shoes. He's awesome. He's just unreal. I guess he was around at a time when I was 18 or 19 or 20 or whatever. I just have to take Michael Jordan. That's number one. I'd also like Jesus Christ to come, just from being brought up as a Catholic boy, and I just got to ask him a few questions, right? So that's those two. Then alive, I'd like to take some game changers, you know, some people that are just absolute awesome game changers. Mark Zuckerberg, I have to get him there, because I reckon – the guy's just created, he's changed the world, this bloke. I mean, whether Facebook is going to, you know, is the answer, or it's Instagram or whatever, but he's just total push towards creating this social media and this whole screen time thing, you know. While he's there, I want Steve Jobs to come along as well. And then the fifth one is a guy that I'm just in love with, but I've never met him and I'm a happily married man, but is Simon Sinek. His TED Talks, every time he speaks, he blows me away. So I reckon that'll be my top five.
Mate, that's fantastic. I reckon that'd be an awesome dinner party, bud. That would be really cool. And I'm a fan of all those guys and girls. That'd be terrific. Jase, I really appreciate you taking the time out to spend some time with the dentists around Australia and around the world who listen to the show. But just quickly, one last piece of advice. If you had to have a billboard on the highway, you know, we've got the gospel according to Jason on the billboard. What would that be?
That would be build a business that's ready for sale. Even if you don't want to sell it, imagine how good a business that is ready for sale right now would be to live in and operate.
Mate, you're a champ. Thank you so much. Mate, you've been really generous, and I am really, really touched that you've taken some time out of your day to come and hang with us, and really appreciate it. You're a good man.
No problems, Jesse. Look, thank you for the opportunity, and thank your listeners for their time, because, you know, they take the time to listen to podcasts like this. So I appreciate that.
Jase, thanks for putting all that stuff together, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thank you too, pal.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Sammy.
I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Jason Cunningham. And more importantly, I hope you took some really great notes so that you can take that information into your practice on Monday and put it into use straight away. as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, he is an absolute live wire. He speaks a mile a minute, but every single word he says is pure gold. And I'd really encourage you, if you've liked what he's had to say in this particular episode, head across to his website, jasoncunningham.com.au. Check out his stuff. He's got his book for sale there, which is called Have Your Cake and Sell It Too, which again is all about creating a business that is eminently saleable. I'd really encourage you to have a look at his blog, have a look at his videos. He's got some good stuff there. So as always, I hope you take those notes and most importantly, put them into place, put them into practice, because if nothing changes, nothing changes. So have a great week ahead and we'll catch up with you on the flip side with another episode of the Savvy Dentist Podcast. But until then, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.